Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Performance Baseball Podcast. How are you, Josh?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. How's everything going with you?
Going well. Going well. Today is Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day, Josh.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. You have any fun plans with your wife?
Yeah, we're going to go to a Brazilian restaurant, steakhouse.
Fancy right there.
Pig out on as many different meats as I can possibly.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Stuff into my gullet.
Nice.
Yeah. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been
to I have not, actually.
Oh, man, you need to. Like, it's filet mignon, but bacon wrapped.
Mignon.
Like, skirt steak, strip steak, lamb chops, bacon wrapped pork, Parmesan chicken, crusted chicken, like, oh, man.
And man.
The salad bar is, like, amazing. So, yeah, you need to do that sometime.
Well, I think we need to hit pause and just, like, go get some food right now. I mean, that sounds really good.
Go hit the lunch special.
Absolutely.
For real. Yeah, no, so we're going to a Fogo Day show. It's new. It's,
oh, yeah, the one right, yeah, right down the road,
over by the mall. We've been to Texas Day Brazil because that was our favorite in Dallas, but Texas Day Brazil up here is not as good as the one in Dallas.
Gotcha.
So we're going to go check out Fogo Day Show and see if it's any better.
Nice. But you'll have to let me know how it is.
Yeah, I will.
Nice.
But yeah,
nice.
I'm looking forward to that.
It's a blast.
Also feeling really good because pitchers and catchers reported.
Absolutely.
So, spring training, baby.
It is baseball season. Baseball season is underway.
So you're Padres, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, Padres are coming back, man. I mean, unfortunately, the culture of the Padres, I feel like, don't shoot me down right here, but, like, I feel like the Padres culture is always get a very good player, develop a really good player, and then just trade them away. Like, all these trades are happening, and yet all we're getting is, like, washed-up players. I mean, Jason Hayward, I mean, I understand he's a great player, but
he's been around a
while. He's been around. Like, that's our big signing for the time, the time being, so.
Do you also have who's your big player? I'm blanking on it.
We still have Tatis. Tatis is still there. We still have Machado. But, man, like getting rid of some players and bringing in, some kind of older players. I mean, I think that's just the culture of the Padres, unfortunately.
How's the pitching looking?
I think pitching should be fine. We still have Musgrove, as long as he stays off the injury list. But we still have him and some other studs in the rotation. But I think we'll be okay.
Okay.
I think
we'll be okay. Who all's in your division?
NL West. NL West.
Is that
so
the Dodgers?
We have the Dodgers. Unfortunately, we have the Dodgers. Yep. I mean, that's always the freeway rivalry right there. Especially with the Dodger market. Yeah. With
is that the Giants too?
Yeah, we got the Giants. Yeah, Diamondbacks are in the division too.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Y'all have four or five. Is it?
And the Rockies five.
Oh, yep. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I mean,
so I'm a Texas Rangers fan. I got my repping my Rangers.
Yeah,
my
you Rangers are. You decked down World Series
got
gear.
My World Series hoodie on.
It's a little old, but hey, it's still World Series. It's still World Series.
It's all going to be based on how healthy we are. I think
absolutely.
If Jacob DeGrom stays healthy, then we'll be good.
We'll
be really good. And we made some good trades. We let go of Nathaniel Lowe, our first baseman. Traded for Jake Berger. That should be a good pickup. We have catcher. I can't remember his name. I can't remember how to pronounce his name.
Hashimura. Oh, yeah.
He's now the backup catcher.
Wow.
And then we've got Evan Carter coming back. He spent most of the season on the injured reserve last year.
Gotcha.
And then, of course, this will be year two for not a rookie now, but I'm blanking on his name. Young guy from Florida. Blanking on his name. Hang on.
You're good.
He's gonna hit like third or fourth. Wyatt Langford. Oh, my word.
There you go. Langford. There you go.
Totally blanked on his name.
Langford right there. Gotcha.
He's an exciting, exciting young player.
Nice. Nice.
So, anyway.
Should be a fun season for baseball, though. Should be fun. Should be fun. It's going to be unless everyone just unless everyone and their mother gets swallowed up by the Dodgers. I mean, they're just signing everyone.
I cannot believe that they went and got Roki Sasaki.
But with all these like deferrals and stuff with their money, I mean, I'm just going to say they're going to file for bankruptcy in 10 years or 15 years when all these contracts hit. We're not going to have the money to pay it out unless they bank on winning the World Series and getting all their bonuses and all that stuff. So
is Shohei supposed to pitch again this year? Is he going to?
I mean, hopefully he's still a phenomenal pitcher, but I know he didn't pitch at all last year because of his injuries. But
Tommy John.
Yeah, but I mean, he still swung well.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be tough to beat the Dodgers, but it should be a fun season. Love baseball season.
Absolutely.
So how do you like the how do you watch the Padres? Do you buy an MLB package? Or do you just kind of catch it when you can?
I actually bum the MLB login for my sister.
Yes.
She's a Padres season ticket holder. Sorry, Padres. But I love supporting, you know, MLB and everything. But hey, like I'm still young, still get my finances in order, you know. So
right,
bummed the login for my sister. You know, so
that's awesome.
Get all the Padres.
I love it.
Hey, and I know there's tons of people out there like that, you know.
That's awesome.
Yes, MLB app.
Who's y'all's like play-by-play?
We have Mark Grant, and then who's the new guy? Who's the Don something? But used to be Matt Vasgersian before he went to MLB Network.
Okay.
But now Mark Grant, he's more of the color commentator. But
What about radio? Do you have a good like classic radio?
Man, I feel like the hang a star on that one, Jerry, oh my gosh, wow, we're just like blanking all day on names, but
put you on the spot,
he's no longer the play-by-play announcer, he was known for the hang a star on that one.
We've got Eric Nadell, and it just, hearing his voice just like relax, puts all of my anxieties to rest.
Yeah.
And his voice is just so relaxing to hear. He's been doing it now for 30 years, and Texas Rangers Hall of Famer. I love hearing Eric Nadell. I think he's working his way out of his job.
I think
he's getting ready to retire here soon. And so they've got a couple of other guys in the pipeline. But, man, I love Eric Nadell.
Yeah.
And he's real big in the Dallas music scene, too. So
nice.
It's fun to see him like sponsor different artists that he likes that are like little indie artists, and he promotes them, and that's fun. And then we got Dave Raymond on the TV call, and the Rangers are doing something different this year, and I haven't decided if I'm going to splurge for it or not, but you know, they've had all these issues with their regional sports network, and they were on Bally, and now Bally went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And so they were trying to figure out what they were going to do to broadcast their games. And they have started their own network, and so they're gonna be the first MLB team to own and run their own regional sports network. Victory Plus, I think, is the name of it. And
gotcha.
So that'll be interesting. So I can get, I don't know if I can get that channel like on my regular DirecTV package or not. We'll have to see. But if I can't, I might just buy the season subscription, which is $100.
Yeah,
$100 for the whole season.
Man, it's such a hassle with all the blackouts and everything. Gosh, it is rough. It is rough.
Well, I was a Dallas Mavericks fan up until about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
when they traded Luka.
Man,
and so I hadn't splurged for like the NBA season thing.
Shot to your heart, though, training.
But and now I may just not. I may just become a Thunder fan now.
Just give in. Yeah.
I tell you what, man. It was so disappointing. It's like you follow this story arc. Like we did this with Dirk, right? I followed Dirk all the way from high school on, and we follow his story arc and his struggles. Like, they get to the finals in 06 and lose. They get swept in the first round of 07 when Dirk wins the MVP, and then they finally get to the mountaintop in 2011 and they win, and then they tear it all down. And but, like, you follow this story arc, and you fall in love with these guys, and they finally win it, and it was so, so sweet in 2011. And so, over these last 7 years, I've been following Luka and wanting to see him do it. And we got there last year. It was like, okay, now this year we can take the next step. We got a way deeper team. And then they traded him.
I feel like that trade just came out of left field. Like, it was such a random trade.
So stupid. Just ruined, I think.
It really doesn't make sense, you know? It just really doesn't make sense for them to trade him away.
No.
I mean, Anthony Davis is a great player, but I mean, it's just such a random... he's already hurt, but it's just such a random trade.
Anyway, all right. Let's get to the subject matter at hand.
Yeah,
We today wanted to spend some time talking about practice planning.
Yeah.
So the first question I had for you was, you know, you've had a lot of experience.
Sure.
From Little League on up to high school to college ball to independent ball.
Yeah.
Pro ball. I wanted to find out from you, what did practices look like when you were in Little League and in high school and in college and pro ball? How were they similar and how were they different? And what kind of things do you take from that, those experiences, and kind of implement?
Today? So, like, thinking back on it, I mean, Little League, you know, when we think back to the, like, childhood, everything kind of gets a little foggy. But, like, from all, like, the memories of, like, Little League is the biggest focus was having fun. You know, the biggest focus for practice was having fun as a kid. So there was always competitions, team focuses, or, you know, splitting the group into two teams and competing. With like rewards, because I feel like kids, you know, when we're younger, you have to incentivize them. And we talked about that last episode. You know, we incentivize players to give them, you know, give their best and have fun with it.
So what were your favorite rewards when you were a kid?
Man, I feel
snow cones.
maybe it was snow cones. Like my dad, you know, coached me growing up. So I mean, yeah, I think it was always like a dessert or even sometimes it was like money, you know, it was money. Like if we were at the batting cages, you know, if you remember like Iron Mike pitching machines where it just has that little tiny hole that shoots the ball out, like, believe it or not, my dad would hand out money. If we hit a line drive right back into that hole, he would give us either $1 or $2 so we can go buy a pack of, you know, bubble gum or cards or whatever was at that, you know, that batting cage. But
that's clever.
It was just the incentive to do well and to have fun with it as a kid. You know, as you start working up a little higher, I think the practices started turning into more of the understanding of the game. So, for instance, like, you know, having practices where we're working through, you know, like infield, outfield, but situations. We'll have situations, but we'll have base runners. So it'll allow us to understand the speed of the game, to understand like, hey, you only have so much time to make a play, or else the batter's going to get on base, you know? Implementing that. So, how every practice was kind of the same working up is, you know, you always have your warm-up time. You'll go through your stretching. You'll go through your play catch, focusing on, you know, again, incentivizing the players to, hey, your partner's in the chest, make good throws, work their way back to long toss and all that. I feel like at the younger ages, it was just like, hey, let's learn how to catch fly balls properly. Let's learn to take ground balls properly. And then we'll have some sort of team focus. So I was working on relays, relay competitions, who could field a ground ball the cleanest and throw it to a target. So very, very focused on the fundamentals and understanding the pace of the game.
Yeah.
So that was kind of it through Little League. I grew up Little League, not like USSSA or anything like that. Little League went up to 12-year-olds. And then from there, it goes into like pony ball. We didn't have school ball back in San Diego.
Did you get a chance to like try and make it to Williamsport and all that when you were about 12?
So I made All-Stars pretty much every year. Like when you're able to make All-Stars, like when you see on TV, Little League World Series is, that's like the majors division for Little League. That was 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, and 12-year-olds. I made All-Stars every year. And it was the 12U, it was the 12-year-old All-Star team that typically is the ones you see on TV. We made it as far, my 12-year-old season, we made it out of our district. We made it into the regionals, which was like, I think it was all of Southern California, or it may have been California and Arizona. I can't remember the actual regionals, but we lost in the regional championship, which would made us into, like, I forget what the levels were, but it was like the district.
Super regionals.
Yeah, super regionals. Yeah, it was like your district, which was like San Diego, and then you went into the regionals, which was like, I think all of Southern California and maybe part of Arizona, something like that. So, I mean, we went up to like Orange County, LA. Nice. We played. So we did play out of town. We'd stay in hotels, you know, like, which is a blast when you're 12 years old, yeah. You know. And you're rocking, you know, the all-star shirt that had your city in it, you know, so we had Vista awesome. On it, which was pretty cool. So that's as far as we went. So, I mean, yeah, Little League.
Great memories.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's so much fun. But yeah, that was, unfortunately, that was as far as we went.
Back to practices. So what did high school practices look like?
Yeah, high school practices, same flow. I do feel like we had a topic that we hit on every single practice, which was base running. We always worked on base running. We always worked fly balls, ground balls. And again, more of the team focus. So I feel like high school was more about results driven. So instead of understanding the game, it was focused a lot more on results. So that's where the 27 outs drill came into play. If you're not familiar with 27 outs, it's like, hey, we're going to do 3 outs an inning. And if you make an error, we start it over, or you have laps at the end of practice or whatever. So it teaches you to play with the intent of being perfect, you know, practice perfect. Yeah. So making the plays that should be made and working through that. Mm-hmm. So, high school is a little bit more results-oriented. So focusing on making routine plays, having consequences to errors or mental side of things. So a lot more, consequences for that. The goal is you still had fun with it.
Right.
So we still had fun. We, had fun practices, but again, practices were a little bit more results oriented.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yep. Then, from there, working in the college and pro, I mean, I feel like college and pro was very similar, whereas like, first off, pro ball, you practice. Well, I'll get to that in a second. But high school or college, you had your show up, you go through your practice, your warm ups. The pitchers and catchers would throw bullpens. You'd have hitting on the field. You'll have a little bit of defensive work, and then that's pretty much the practice in a nutshell.
Interesting.
Okay. So it was a lot more
individual, skill based.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a team focus. We had a team focus at the practice. You would have some individualized, like hitting on the field, taking ground balls and throwing. But it was kind of expected that you work on your skill work by yourself or in a small group outside of that. Right. So a lot more.
What's an example of like a team focus that you would do in college?
Yeah, in college. So we'd show up, like for instance, like a typical practice would be show up, stretch, play catch, pitcher and catcher would go throw bullpens, whoever was scheduled for their rotation, their bullpens, because you'd be on a rotation. Defenders, the defense would work ground balls, fly balls, relays, cutoffs. It would be really concise, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then it'd be batting practice with base running built into the batting practice.
Some live hitting and work on the situations as they arise.
Once you get done with your round of batting practice, you'd hustle out of the box, you'd be on first base, you'd work your way into a hit and run, so you'd work through a hit and run, as a hitter and as a base runner.
So the coach would kind of prescribe, okay, hey, here's a hit and run situation, let's do that, and you would work on that at first base.
Yep, as the base runners.
And,
yeah.
And then work on something.
That's pretty much practice day in and day out for the most part in college. Pro ball, really. You had spring training, you had preseason practices, but then once you get underway, like you really don't have practice.
Yeah.
Really don't have practice. You just
get your individual work.
You're playing tons of games. You get your individual work. If your swing feels off, like it's on you to fix it.
Yeah.
If you're on ground balls, you show up to the field, you take some ground balls. And really what you work on before games, that's really all, everything in a nutshell,
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So, I remember some of my favorite memories of Little League practices are Well, maybe not my favorite memory, but what I remember for sure was, laps, running laps. I will never forget laps, running W's, all of those.
Yes.
But no, we would work on different drills and, like you said, competitions. Those were good times. The coach that I had when we were in Little League, he was not a dad on the team. He was just a guy who enjoyed coaching baseball.
That's awesome.
Which I feel like was kind of unique. Now this was the 90s, but,
sure.
I remember he drove a truck for, Mesilla Valley Transportation, and I still see those trucks on the road today. And every time I see one,
I think of your Little League coach.
My Little League baseball coach. It was him, and then and so I was in Las Cruces, New Mexico at the time, and so our field was just all dirt. There was no grass.
Hey, gets the job done.
It was all dirt. The city fields were decent, but man, we had a tough little team. We did not, I don't remember how far we made it when it was time to like go for it, but we got to the city championship, I know. And, we needed to win one of two games and we lost both.
Oh,
we were
gosh.
The number one seed and we lost to a team that we had beaten twice in the season. Like,
oh, man.
I'll never forget those, never forget those, but. Oh, yeah, I definitely remember snow cones after the game and stuff like that. Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome.
Those were my favorite memories. And I was voted team cheerleader.
No.
which is probably why I still have some of that rah-rah coach in me.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. You're just the ultimate hype man,
That's
you know?
That's right, exactly.
That's awesome.
I was not near as talented at baseball as you were, but I played right field. And
nice.
And I remember the first time I got a base hit and kid pitch. I hadn't like made contact like all season.
Yeah.
And it was probably three quarters of the way through the season. And I laced this line drive to left center. And I had no idea where it had gone. I just like,
hey, that's the right mindset. Hit and run.
And I just ran. And it was a single or a double. I can't remember. But man, I never forgot that feeling either.
That's awesome. Dude, we could always like rewind to that one time where it's like, oh my gosh, like I remember that like yesterday.
Yeah.
That ultimate feeling where you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Man.
What do you have a moment of that like that for you?
I have a like going like back in the Little League days. I remember like I only hit one home run in all Little League, and I hit one. It went over the left center.
Yeah.
There was a railroad track that was like that would go straight by left field, so I hit almost like it probably rolled to the railroad tracks, but it like cleared the fence.
That's
I remember
awesome.
Who's the old school highlight where the guy hits the walk off home run and he pumps his fist. Like, was it Gibson or where he's just doing the fist, you know, where he's like cha-ching, cha-ching, you know, just going around it. Like I swear I did that. Threw my hands up, like hands up in the air,
that's
running
awesome.
Like crazy. Like, I just remember, like, I thought I, like, won the World Series with it, even though it was just, like, a normal
That's
routine.
Awesome.
You know, normal one-run home run. I felt like I won the World Series on the home run, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so we wanted to talk through some, like, baseball practice do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
So let's start with when you are running a baseball practice, what are some of the don'ts? Don't do this. The first one that I'm going to say is do not put all of the kids in the field and have the coach at home plate and just hit one ball at a time and say, plays at second or whatever it is. Don't let that be your whole practice. Like, that is a really boring practice. And then, you know, I see that as the MO a lot of times.
Sure.
And so what you end up with is like maybe your center fielder gets three balls hit to them in a 30-minute time frame.
Yeah.
Like that's to me is like poor practice planning.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I feel like that is a don't for the majority of the practice. There is definitely a time and place for it. But yeah, like what you said is like, don't build the entire practice around that.
Right.
It is a good snapshot on like, hey, let's spend 15, 20 minutes on it, or, you know, even shorter on that. It's like, all right, but we're going to work tempo. Like, we're not going to have little Johnny over in right field, like getting cold and shivering and kicking, you know, holes in the dirt or holes in the grass. Because you have to stop and explain something. If you can make it fast where it's like, hey, plays at second, let's go. Plays at first, good. Or you know, whatever. It's running on first, bam. Right. Mixing it up. But, yeah, especially with, like, younger kids, it's going to get boring real fast.
Or having the coach pitching to one kid. And I've seen that one, too, where the whole practice is each kid takes a turn and the coach is pitching to one kid. And maybe they hit one ball out of five pitches, and maybe that one ball's in play, and maybe it's a foul ball. So, you know, you spend an hour and a half, and each kid has hit, like, four balls and maybe fielded once or twice. Like, don't do that.
I think so with, like, the don'ts, I'm going to give you the do's with, like, in place of, like, the whole, you know, team being on the field and one coach hitting a ball. An easy way to make that from a don't to a do is go to fungo, you know, like for instance, like, hey, we'll have one coach working the left side of the field and one coach working the right side of the field, or we'll work left side of the field relays to second base, and then we'll have coach two hitting ground balls to third base and throwing across the first base. So it's just like a constant movement. So that's kind of a way to move that don't to a do. For batting practice, I mean, how do you – so, like, if you're trying to hit on the field, how do you move that don't to a do? Do you put, like, a pitch limit on players, or how do you work through it?
Yeah.
Or do you even hit on the field at the younger ages?
Yeah, we do. I usually just do that as a scrimmage at the end.
Nice.
So I might take the last 30 minutes and do a scrimmage.
Yeah.
And I was telling you about this earlier, but what I like to do is set up – so I've got 12 players on one of my teams and 11 on the other, but I'll set up three teams of four.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have one team batting, one team infield, and one team outfield. And if you've got 12, then one of those outfielders is, you know, on the infield. And the coach pitches, or I mean, you could do it with kid pitch too. But I'll start them off with a count. I'll start them off with, hey, you're on a 1-1 count or a 2-1 count or a 1-2 count. And let's work on our different approaches with at those different counts. And then I put a time limit on it. I say, all right, we're going to run 5-minute half innings or third innings or whatever they are.
Yeah.
And so I'll set a timer on my watch and we'll just go. If I'm pitching, then we'll start with a 2-1 count or whatever. And they hit, they run. And then they, you know, if they get out, they're out and they go to the next person in line, or if they get on base, then they're running the bases like they normally would. And it goes quick. It goes really fast.
Especially when you have the time limit on it. Yeah.
Right. Then at the end of that 5 minutes, you count out how many runs they've got. And then the batters go to the outfield comes to the infield goes to bat. And you start them off the same way with whatever count that you want them working on that day. Are they ahead in the count? Are they behind in the count? Whatever. And my boys have fun with it because they swing the bat and they want to hit you get presented with a lot of different situations. And that's a lot of fun. I've also done that indoor, with weighted balls. And I just tell them, hey, don't overhand throw this, just underhand toss it.
Yeah.
And we'll set it up in the cages where you don't have a lot of room.
Yeah.
But you do a miniature baseball field.
Yeah.
And run it the same way.
Yeah.
And we did that for practice a few days ago. And, oh, man, the boys had so much fun. They just wanted to keep playing and keep playing.
Yeah, the weighted ball is a great approach. I've done it with wiffle balls. But, like, weighted ball would definitely be interesting.
Huh. Yeah, because it doesn't go – it obviously
– Yeah, it doesn't go as far. Yeah.
You don't want them hurting their arms or elbows or whatever throwing it. So they'll chase each other. But, like, this past week when we did that, we had one kid who was really struggling with paying attention to the lead runner. And, like, he would get distracted by – the following runner and would try and go get them out, and then the lead runner would go score.
Yeah.
And it's real easy in a miniature field to take extra bases, to keep going. And so, like, the game moves really fast when you do it that way. And I usually say in those situations, no walks. Like, if you get to a walk, you just go next to the end of the line.
Yeah.
Because I want the boys hitting.
Absolutely.
To me, that's what.
Or say, hey, you get two swings, or, you know, whatever it is, three pitches. Yeah. Wow. That's a good approach.
So, I mean, that's one idea.
Yeah.
And it really keeps the boys moving. And especially for the ones who are trying to get back on the field and get in position and get ready. If they know that timer's going and the batter's ready, if they're not on the field, they're going to miss a play and allow a run to score. And then we'll usually do, like, at the end, the winning team, you know, gets a reward, and the two losing teams have to do push-ups.
I was going to ask if you do an incentive on that. Got it. That's a good approach. Yeah, it's definitely fun and unique, like, from a coaching standpoint. Like, our program, we have outdoor practice and we have indoor practice. So trying to figure out the best way to keep everyone plugged in, so there's not a lot of standing around, especially on an indoor, because, you know, if you're working with two cages or three or four cages,
right?
I mean, if you have 12 kids, you're definitely trying to keep everyone plugged in, so it's not, you know, little Johnny and David over in the corner just hanging out doing whatever while they're waiting. You know, it's a great way to keep everyone plugged in.
Do you have any other do's or don'ts?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a do is it definitely changed my whole. You know, like, we always want to start practice on a good note. And I don't know how well it would use, you know, work with a younger team. However, like, with that middle tier, like, for instance, like, 13-year-olds, that's who I coach, is always starting practice with play catch. Obviously everyone does. You stretch on, you play catch, is, focusing on quality play catch. So if there's overthrows, bad throws, all that stuff, like, I like to set the tone, and we haven't had an opportunity to have outdoor practice yet, but this season I'm going to really ingrain in them. And this worked with an older team that I coached with in the past, is for every bad throw, overthrow, miss throw, it's actually a sprint at the end of practice.
Oh.
And believe it or not, the first year that we introduced this to one of our older groups, man, that first practice, obviously everyone's rusty, and we just set the tone right away. I think we went from, like, geez, it was crazy. I think we went from, like, 27 overthrows.
Oh,
give it 2 weeks of 90-foot sprints around the bases. That count, like, I think we went down to single digits within 2 weeks.
Nice.
Because it makes you focus on, because how many times, like, as coaches, and everyone falls victim to this, where it's like, hey, go get warmed up, and we don't have eyes on them. You know, like, they're out there. Meanwhile, the coaches are talking by home plate, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yep. Or the boys are messing around.
Yeah.
They're throwing it, you know, in ways that are not proper form, just because they're goofing off or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But if we're goofing off doing bad, you know, bad throws, all it does is set them up for failure, because every single rep matters.
Yeah.
So if they're not throwing the ball properly, what are they going to do in a game or practice?
Yeah.
They're probably going to have the tendency to just mess around on their throw. But if they're focused on proper footwork, timing of their arm, and hitting their partner in the chest, like, it's going to go a long way when you have a do or die situation, hit to the left field, and you have to make the relay throw. You're going to hit your relay in the chest.
Yep.
So I think dues is just setting that tone from the get-go. Again, running, it depends on the age group. Sometimes.
I've done it that way. I've done it with push-ups. I will have my boys play quick catch, you know, like, move your feet, see how many you can catch in a minute.
Yeah.
And I'll just time them. And whoever catches the most can sit out and not have to do the push-ups. Everybody else has got to do the push-ups
and
or
the
sprints or whatever, or the lunges or whatever it is. I've done that same thing for, like, counting the number of drops, and here's the consequence.
Absolutely.
That is really effective.
I kid you not, that first season we went from, like, 20, in the mid-20s, late 20s, like, upper 20s to single digits on overthrows. And it improved our game tremendously just because we were focused on the small things.
Yeah.
So hitting your partner in the chest. I think the next step is, like, do's and don'ts. Like, I think it comes down to, like, with the older groups, like, punishments. You know, as a coach, you hold players accountable. Is, like, when is the do and when is the don't to run? To run as a punishment.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Like, do you run as a punishment? I feel that there's always a place to run. yeah. like as a consequence, but you also don't want to take away the joy of them running. Right. I never want youth kids to think like running is always a punishment, because running is actually very good for you. Running, yeah. it builds your your strength in your legs. It builds your stamina, your aerobic capacity. And it also is just like a mental thing too. If you have to run for distance, like it should be an enjoyable thing. But when do you use it for punishment, and when is it not supposed to be used?
So
what do you do?
If it's a competition, I tend to use push-ups because they can stay right there and
yeah.
and get it done pretty quickly. And we don't have to take a lot of time out of practice.
Sure.
I will use running as a consequence, especially when there's a lack of focus.
Sure.
Or if a kid's not listening to me, or if it's an attitude thing
yeah.
or an effort thing.
Yeah.
I will definitely say, okay, go run a touch center field.
Yeah.
And then come back, you know, and hopefully you've got a different frame of mind when you come
back. That's, you nailed it right there. It's a different frame of mind, because I do feel like running, it takes your mind off of what you obviously are thinking about what you did to cause the running,
yeah.
but it definitely resets your mind.
Yeah.
It resets your mind.
Now, we can get into what our actual practice plans are here
yeah.
in a sec, but like one of the things that I implemented with my older team last year was a regular workout at the end of each practice. And it would be about 15 minutes or so.
Sure.
And it was strength, it was conditioning, it was, those kinds of body weight type exercises.
Yeah.
And my older team is 10U. And so I have not done the, tack on laps or sprints at the end of practice yet, but I kind of like that idea.
Yeah.
And kind of either having that be part of that workout or in addition to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be a good one.
And the secret sauce to this is like the running at the end of practice, like a lot of practice fields like don't have lights. So once it starts getting dark, you can't use a ball anymore. So, I mean, it's just the easy
That's
way.
True.
It's an easy way. Like if you say, hey, practice is done at 7, sun's going down, it's like, all right, well, let's go run the base. So you don't need you don't need daylight for that.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're not going to be pitch black. We're going to be mindful of that. And we're not going to run practice late because of it, but it's just going to be like, hey,
yeah.
we can run practice, You don't
have
to worry about that. Oh, I can't see the bases. No, you can see the bases.
So, one of the things that I've learned over the last year is when you are going into a season, and I brought this book with me today, this travel ball book by Ron Filipkowski. Great book. Learned a lot from it, but, I started implementing this last season and I've done it again this season with the help of my assistant coaches. But instead of just going into a season, let's just talk for a moment about what does preseason practice look like? What does in-season practice look like? And what are the differences? So going into a season, one of the things that me and my assistant coaches did this go-round was make a list of all of the things that we felt like we needed to work on and hit that were really important before the season started.
Sure.
And then, you can go ahead and, what your practice schedule is going to be or should be for that month before your first game. Build into each practice a plan to hit all of those different elements.
Sure.
So that you have hit all of them by the time the season starts, by the time you get to that first game.
Yeah.
So you're not just showing up to practice thinking, okay, well, what should we work on today? And do the exact, like it's easy, I think, to get into a routine of things that we do regularly.
Yeah.
And that's one way of building some intent into your practice planning ahead of time. And you could say, okay, practice one, we're going to work on these couple things. Practice two, it's going to be these couple things.
Yeah.
Practice three, it'll be this. And you just kind of work your way through that list so that you make sure that you've hit all those things.
Yeah, that's a good thing to outline kind of those preseason things. One thing that I like doing is, well, first off, we're in Oklahoma. So, I mean, that early spring, January, February, like travel ball for us typically starts right about early March, like beginning of March. Sometimes they'll squeak in like the end of February, which those are wild people because it's so cold at that time. Yeah. But March typically when we get underway. It's going to be
-2 next week.
Yeah. And yeah, it's Valentine's Day right now. So, yeah, January and February, we don't really get to get on the field as much just because the weather's so hit or miss. So I like starting out with just getting people's arms and shapes. So, like, for instance, January, I know you were super structured. I know your answer was, like, very structured. But, like, for instance, right now we're in the middle of February. We're already working through bullpens, making sure that our arms are getting in shape. We'll do light throwing. We'll start doing some flat ground stuff. We won't be on the mound until, like, that second week or so, second, third week. I already set the expectation of my players to throw in the off season, so their arms should be decently prepared.
I did as well.
And awesome. And I'm not saying go pitch a 60-pitch bullpen right away. No, like our first one, I think we did 15 pitch from the stretch and 15 pitch from the windup. So 30 pitches, just to get the cobwebs off.
Do you have your players take some time off after the fall season?
Yeah. So we wrap up. Halloween, so we'll be off November, December, and then we'll get rocking and rolling in January. So
so no throwing or anything during those months.
I mean throwers are throwers. They'll most kids will shut it down, but if they throw, I have no problem with it, just because the intensity of the throws aren't probably going to be very much,
right.
If they're doing like one-on-one lessons, they're only going to be throwing like once a week. The actual shutdown, I don't necessarily tell anyone to completely shut it down just because I know they're already going to shut down no matter. They're going to shut it down. Like no one's going to be outside in December, here in Oklahoma throwing. If we're in like San Diego, maybe a whole nother aspect just because you have beautiful weather year round. I mean, geez, they have fall ball, winter ball, careful. spring ball, summer ball. I mean, they're playing year round. But yeah, for instance, my kids, I'm just going to say it's safe to say that they probably didn't touch a ball in December.
Yeah.
I
tell my boys not to. I want them to go play other sports.
Absolutely.
Go play basketball. Go play soccer, indoor soccer, or go. My boys, my sons, not my team boys, but my sons. We actually did wrestling for the first time over the winter, and that was really good. I've already seen. In both of my sons, their arm strength is way better, and they're throwing a lot harder.
Wow!
Just in
probably two
3 months of wrestling.
Yeah, they probably got stronger. They understand their bodies a little bit more, just because wrestling gets you in a weird position, and you have to find a way to be strong in that position. So their they probably
core,
just found.
Yeah, there was a lot of just core work in, and obviously arms. And your legs, like you use your legs a whole lot more than you would expect in wrestling. And absolutely. Yeah. Anyways, we're going to keep doing that because
awesome.
That was really good for them.
That's awesome. Yeah. But going back to like the timeline, January we'll start doing, or February we started some bullpens, then get rocking and rolling. We'll start getting, fielding, we'll start hitting. Our program, performance baseball, we actually, in January, we get all of our teams in here for preseason workouts. We don't say.
Which I love that. I've not been part of that before this year. This is our first time.
Yeah.
And I have really, really loved, the sled, pushing the sleds, pulling the sleds and sprints and, all of the agility drills and the kettlebells and the medicine balls and all those things. It's great.
Yeah, how we structure it is all of our youth ages will come in. So first week of January, like right when everyone goes back to school, is when we'll kick it off. And like our youth ages, 12 and under, are doing preseason workouts with coaches where they'll spend 45 minutes of like baseball specific skill stuff. So starting to slowly ramp up their arms, but whether start hitting situations, fielding, throwing, all that stuff for 45 minutes. And then we'll do 45 minutes of just like speed and strength work. So pushing sleds, agility ladder, different styles of, trainings for that. Then our older kids will actually do a lot more like speed work. Yeah. Running, agility stuff. We'll do strength training with some barbells, dumbbells, all the normal strength. And then we'll have an actual plyo ball and med ball routine that we'll work through with that, which we
like on the drive line.
Yeah, we love drive line, and that's what our gym runs on, is kind of a modified version of drive line. And like
the plyo ball,
all the plyo routine. Care routines, J bands, all that stuff, med ball throws. Yeah,
I have my boys use the J bands.
Yeah,
I think that's really, really good.
Yeah, for getting arms. I mean, to be honest, we haven't had any arm injuries through all of it. Everyone's arms are pretty well caught up to shape, you know, by as long. I mean, again, they're not mandatory workouts, but those that come, like, their arms aren't hanging by the time we get going. So
I've already seen it in some of the boys on my team, like. The arms that you know, they're stronger. They're throwing harder than they were even 3 months ago.
Yeah, and the goal is, like, to slowly ramp up. Like, no one needs a little league elbow, which is just the overuse where when you jump in too much too soon, we just understand that we have to slowly ramp things up. You know, and then so we're ready to go for a full season starting in March.
Okay, so I want to walk through, like, what would your typical – kind of outdoor practice look like, and what would your typical indoor practice look like?
Yeah, our typical outdoor practice will show up at, like, it's expected that, hey, we're starting on time. Like, if frac starts at 5:30, is at 5:30. My 13-year-olds, they now have phones, so we're always communicating. Like, it's up to them to communicate if they're running late or whatever, but 5:30 or whatever time, like, we're starting. We have a specific warm-up where we're doing it all as a team. It's not just like a hodgepodge. Everyone's warming up.
Yep.
We're doing a play catch routine. So we're starting out on one knee. Then we're doing some shoulder rotational throws. Then we're stepping in, working our way back to long toss.
How do you do some J band work there at the beginning?
We don't, not necessarily at the field, just because we don't have J bands with us at that time. So we don't necessarily do any J bands at the field. When we do indoor, we will do J bands, from time to time, depending on the practice schedule.
I went ahead and got I told all of my parents to buy a set.
That's fantastic.
So all of my boys have a set of J bands.
That's awesome.
And it's just part of our dynamic warm up.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good stance. And yeah, the only reason we don't do J bands is just because we don't have the equipment with us at that time. So, but that's awesome that you made a mandatory. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So we do it before practices and games. And
that's awesome.
The boys know it now and they've got it down.
It's about establishing a routine. Setting them up for success. So we'll play catch. Then we'll come in and work on our quick hands. And again, like, there'll be a consequence to if we have any overthrows, like, it's just, hey, we're going to practice to be perfect.
Yeah.
I think it was UCLA. There was a ABCA video I saw a little last season or two seasons ago. And they were talking about, like, they will never shorten their play catch. They will always have the opportunity to extend their play catch, because that's the most important part of practice is being able to play catch. And if you can't play catch, then you're not going to do really well in the field. So, so we have a really high focus on play catch.
We had that issue with my 7U team a couple of years ago when we were 7U. We had just kind of moved up from T-ball and, like, we were just struggling so much to catch the ball on the field.
Yeah.
And that's when I finally was like, we've got to implement some more intensity into that catch play time. And we started doing some of the things that you're talking about, like counting the number of drops and consequences. And like you said, making that a much bigger part of practice until we got to a point where we were, like, not dropping more than three or four. It made a huge difference in games.
It's all about just switching the focus, right? So, like, if it doesn't matter to you, it's not going to matter to them. But if it matters to you, like, the players are going to have it start mattering to them.
That's a good word right there.
I mean, it just has to matter. And I think that there's too many coaches out there that don't care enough that it's just like, team just needs to warm up.
Loosen up their arms.
Yeah, they need to loosen up their arms.
So what does your catch play routine look like?
We'll start out on one knee about, I don't know, like 10 feet away. So throwing knee down, we'll focus on just, like,
finishing flipping on the other side.
Yeah. So we'll start out with just, like, flips. We're just, like, out of the fingertips. So just rolling out of the fingertips.
Working on 12-6.
Yeah, just feeling us stay behind the ball, again, backspin out of the ball. And then we'll work on, getting that's your shoulders into
thing.
It.
That's a real big thing for kids at the younger levels, because they haven't quite figured out how to get their thumb under the ball.
When their thumb's off center, that ball is going to go all wonky. So staying behind the ball, getting backspin, they should be able to feel it. And then from there, they'll start getting into their shoulders where the gloves point to their target or their elbow, and then they're working through, finishing down by their left hip or their opposite hip if they're a lefty. And then they'll work their way back about five steps, and they'll go concrete feet where their toes are pointing to the target. They'll rotate their shoulders, point their glove to the target, throw, nose goes to the target, or fold, or however you want to teach it. And then they'll take five steps back. And, like, each station, they're about, I don't know, 5 to 7 throws or so. They'll work back a little bit, probably five steps or so. They'll start stepping their way in. Then they should be pretty close to getting to 90 feet. And then just, like, start working their way back from there.
Yeah.
To their max distance throw, to where they're either hitting their partner in the chest or they're one-hopping it to their partner. And they should do about, I don't know, 7 throws from there, where they're trying to just get everything out of their arm, the biggest, loftiest throw that they could possibly make and still hit their partner or a one-hop. And then from there, they work their way in. Once they get about 7 throws from there, try throw it online. So try throw a missile to their partner's chest or, again, a one-hop. And one-hops aren't bad because it forces your partner to now just work behind the ball, and they should be able to get that one-hop. But once you get close enough to hit them in the chest, it's expected to hit them in the chest, and then they'll work your way into about, I don't know, 20 feet or 15 feet or whatever, and they'll work quick hands from there, and then practice, and then play catch is done.
Nice. Ours is similar. I always start with short hops. So we just have them, you know, in partners.
Yeah.
Working on short hops and starting with that glove on the ground.
Nice.
And working up through the ball.
Yeah.
And then we'll work backhands, work forehands, work middle. And then we'll do a little bit of, you know, ground balls funneling to your chest and just working on the footwork and, you know, those little details.
Is that before you play catch?
Yeah.
Nice.
That's what we always start with. And then once we get through that, then we don't do the knee throws, although I might start incorporating that. But we'll start with the twisting.
Yeah.
And I call them power tees of like, put your glove and get your arm up and get that ball away from your face. And,
hey, tomato, tomato, you know, it doesn't matter what it's called. It gets the job done.
So we'll do those twists. Like you said, with your both toes pointed, at your, partner. And then we move back a little bit and do rockers, where you kind of lunge forward, lunge back, and then throw off that back foot and bring that back foot around and all of that. And then we move back from there and finish with quick catch, like what you were saying.
Nice.
Yeah, very, very similar.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it shouldn't take that long.
Right.
You know, like, it's such a big focus, but it's a huge focus for a short amount of time. Like, play catch shouldn't take longer than, I mean, maybe 7 minutes or so. But this should be a big focus.
One thing, and I don't remember where I picked this up, but recently I picked this up, where I've started telling the players, when you catch that ball, I want you really reaching for it and letting it smack the back of that glove.
Yeah.
I want to hear it. I want you to forcefully go and get that ball.
Let
it smack the back of that glove. Like, I should be able to hear a really good game of catch, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I should, without even looking, I should be able to hear the sound of the ball pop in the mitt. And if you're doing it correctly, it'll have a sound to it.
And baseball enthusiasts, like, there's like, I think there's two sounds in baseball that's the most beautiful sound, is the crack of the bat, but also the pop of a glove.
The pop
of a glove, like that ball getting in that glove, like just right, is the most beautiful sound, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing I've been emphasizing with my teams, this season, going into this season.
That's awesome.
So then, after catch play, we usually go ahead and do base running right then.
Nice.
What do you do?
Yeah, I typically work into some small group work. In the past, like when I was coaching an older group, there's 2 full-time coaches. So we'll work into 2 small groups. So we'll have infield group and we'll have an outfield group or whatever the focus is for that day. Or it could be like pitchers, catchers, and first baseman as a group and middle infielders a group or whatever it is. We'll work in the small group. So, for instance, like this year we'll have 3 total coaches. So we'll have like infield group, outfield group, and then like probably pitcher catcher group. Or again, whatever we're focusing on.
Yeah.
And that's just the small little skill work for that specific role. So like, for instance, like outfielders, how to get behind the ball, and then work through the fly ball, catching on their glove side ear, working with 2 hands and how to actually properly bring it to your chest. Cause it's not just like a catch and like just drop your glove. It's like a catch and bring it to your chest or bring it to your funnel. Middle infielders, it could be short hops, backhand, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
a big thing we focused on last year was like following your throw. So like being able to funnel it and use your feet and like not just throw the ball and stop, but actually like throw the ball and follow through with a couple steps just to keep your direction with your throws.
For my age group, in outfield, just teaching them to do that drop step of like opening your hips up to the ball, which side of it is on that, like it takes, I feel like it takes so long to teach that skill. They all want to backpedal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no.
You're going to trip, you're going to fall, or you're not going to go very far.
Sprint to the spot.
Yeah.
Get behind that ball.
Yeah.
And, come through it. Go back, hopefully go back towards the infield as you're catching.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we'll work through small group stuff. And that includes, like, PFBs, like pitcher fielding practice. Oh, okay. So, like, having pitchers get over on ground balls to the right side of the infield. Just establishing all those, you know, routine things that –
So you've got three groups then usually at the beginning?
This season we'll have three. The other two coaches are volunteer coaches. So, I mean, they're there. And then if they're not, then we'll go two groups or whatever it is. And then after that, then that's when we bring the entire team together and we'll go through a group focus. So we'll go through 27 outs. We'll go through like whatever, 9 innings of perfect baseball.
So with 27 outs, I've seen it done a couple of different ways. How do y'all do that?
So what we've done, like, it definitely depends on the age group and who can handle it. But, like, with 13, I feel like it was very safe to do. But for every error, we start allowing one redemption. Because, like, if you have an error, runner gets on first base, you can actually redeem yourself with a double play, right? No harm done. But if we don't redeem it, or if it's just like, outfielder missed the ball, rolls to the fence, runner's out on third base, everyone stops. Outfielders have to sprint, touch second base, and get back to their position. Infielders have to sprint, touch home plate, get back to their position. And then we reset the inning.
Interesting.
So that's where the running comes in as a punishment, but it's also to clear their brains. You know, it is a punishment. Like, hey, refocus, let's go. Because at the end of the day, like, if you're doing 27 outs, that's 9 innings. You mess up, like, it's exhausting.
Right.
But, I mean, baseball can be tiring. Yeah. You know, it can be taxing. So,
how long does it normally take you to get through
27? I mean, honestly, it depends on – I love calling it 27 outs, but sometimes it may be 12 outs. So maybe, you know, maybe 15. Okay, you know, whatever it is.
Whatever it is for that day.
Whatever it is for the day, whatever time we've have allotted.
I was about to say, I think at the 8-year-old level, 27 outs would take
you may go
day.
9 outs. You may go 9 outs or whatever it is. Right. But, I think last season, I think we started just doing like 12 outs just because for the sake of time and all that.
But every time you get through an inning, like you're
then
at
we'll
that
clear,
level,
then
we'll,
yeah.
And then you can move on to the next.
Yeah. Okay, and then teaching them to get on and off the field after every inning, we'll hustle to where the dugout should be. Or if the practice field has a dugout, we'll sprint to the dugout and then we'll take the field again. So
now, do you have batters batting during that, or is it just the
we
coach?
Do not? It would just be a coach fungo.
Yeah.
I mean, you could definitely do it with batters batting.
Do have runners running.
We'll have ghost runners. We have 11 people on our team, so sometimes we don't have enough. And you know how practices go. Sometimes you're missing one or two. So you may have someone rotating out of position, or you may have one runner and two ghost runners. Or even coaches running. So the field that we practice on is just pushing the limits of size. We don't hit on the field just because it can't quite handle us hitting. Yeah. So we'll definitely have like a fungo or something like that.
You work on hitting more in your indoor practices then?
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so you work through 27 outs. Then how do you usually kind of wrap up?
And we usually wrap up with base running. Different styles of steals, the way we should lead off second base, first base, third base. Typically, like, we'll have the routine. Start at home, sprint through first, you know, as a single, go first to third, score on sac fly, then home to second, score from second base, hit a triple, sac fly, score. Stuff like that, unless we're doing a real deep dive. Like, first few practices, we'll go through actual leadoffs and like reading pitchers, when to steal, when to know dive back.
I still have to do quite a bit of that at the younger age level because they oh man, we got picked off so much
last
season. It drove me crazy,
and I think that's where, and that kind of like segues into like the timing of practice, you know, like whether it's early in the season, middle part of the season, or later in the season, is it's a matter of like the beginning of the season, we're probably working on leading off. You know, we're not just going to go base running. We're going to work on leading off and stealing bases. Right. I was a catcher. Sometimes I love to show off. So, like, me and the other coach, like, he'll be the pitcher and I'll be the catcher. And it's like, hey, steal on us. You know, like, if he picks you off, you got 10 push-ups or whatever it is.
Right.
If I throw you out a second, like, you got 10 push-ups. You know, whatever it is. Yeah. So, like, work to try to, like, beat us, you know?
Yeah.
You have a huge focus on that. Or just do a lot of dry reps where it's, like, reading the pitchers or, you know, your steps.
Yeah, so we, like I said, we typically do base running at the beginning of practice or on the front end of practice after they've kind of gotten their bodies loose and warmed up. And I actually time them, and then I keep track of their times throughout the season.
Yeah.
But that also helps me to know, like, who's
– Do you clock pitchers at that age? Do you clock, like, pitchers' deliveries to home and seeing if they can steal?
I haven't done that. I probably need to start –
Same. You know your speedy guys and your slower guys, so I know. But, like, yeah.
But it was great. Like, at the beginning of last season, I mean, we had some guys who obviously were slower. But the more I timed them, and, like, I call out their times, so everybody knows. there's a little bit of that, you know, competition.
Yeah.
Inter-squad competition.
Yeah.
Of, like, oh, I was faster than you.
Or if you get embarrassed, it's like, no, just get faster. Yeah, you know, like, work hard. Yeah. Like, just go.
And, like, it. If you want a faster time, make sure you hit the front of the base. You know, don't hit the back of the base or round it correctly.
Hit that inside corner. And you'll have a shorter time. Yeah.
If you go really, really wide, it doesn't matter how fast your legs are, you're going to have a slower time.
Yeah.
We usually go home to first. I'll time that, and then first to third. But I like your idea of even doing home to second and second to home and triples too.
Just a way to build it up, like short sprints. So it targets every single aspect. And then sometimes, like, with base running, we'll do, like, have a coach in the outfield, and we'll just, like, hit fly balls. So, like, one coach will fungo fly balls so they can either read if the ball's down or if the ball's getting caught, if you need to get off further, get off shallower. Right. Because, you know, you're set, you know, if there's a fly ball, your lead may be a little different when you're getting off the bag for all that. So, understanding, like, how to read the ball.
So similar to you, after we do base running, we'll break out into stations and do skill work.
Nice.
Whether that's infield or outfield or pitching or whatever.
Yeah.
And I, at the age that we're at right now, at 10U and 8U, I try and have guys be knowledgeable of a couple of different positions. And so I want them getting infield work and outfield work and some pitching. I want all of my boys to pitch.
Yeah.
We'll work on, like, individual skill drills, whatever that might be. Whether it's, you know, footwork on grounders or footwork on fly balls learning how to flip from second to the shortstop at second base. You know, there's, you know, three different flips that you can do.
Yeah.
The other thing that I started doing last season was we taught our boys an infield routine.
Hmm.
And so we would stack each position 2, maybe 3 deep.
Yeah.
And so we would have 2 catchers, 2 third basemen, 2 shortstop, 2 second base, 2 first base.
Sure.
We would start with around the horn.
Yeah.
And so we would go throw the ball from the catcher to third base, to second base, to shortstop,
mm-hmm.
to first base, and then first base would empty out to that secondary catcher.
Yeah.
And we would go around, I think, 6 times so that everybody got at least 2 chances to catch and throw.
Yeah.
So we would go around 6 times, and then we would do get one. Where you get a ground ball, throw to first, and then the first baseman empties out to the secondary catcher. And basically, I'm hitting them because there's 2 first basemen.
Yeah.
I can hit.
Yeah, a little infield. Yeah, infield and, routine. Yeah, right, perfect.
I can hit those balls pretty rapidly.
Yeah.
And we get through, you know, that pretty quickly. And then after get one is get one in cover.
So you work in the catchers.
Yep. We work in the catchers. So, it goes regular play to so, like, if I'm hitting to third base throws to first base throws to the primary catcher, and the primary catcher throws down to second base.
Gotcha. Or follows whoever got the ball. Yeah, whoever got the ball
to, you know, to third base. And yeah. then they tag and then throw it to the secondary catcher.
Nice.
And then you move to position to by position. So then the shortstop gets it, throws to first, to the main catcher throws to the shortstop at second.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we do get two, so we roll two, and then get two and cover, which is actually our first and third play.
Nice.
And we didn't quite get our first and third play down very well. Usually by the time we got to get two and cover, they lost track of what they were supposed to do. So we're going to keep working on that one.
Sure, yeah.
We could do get one, we could do get one and cover, we could do get two. The get two and cover, whatever, for whatever reason, had a really hard time with it. Yeah. And then we would end with code red, which is infield in. You get two balls, a grounder, and then a slow roller.
Slow roller, gotcha.
So nice. A grounder that you throw to first, and then a slow roller that you throw home.
Nice.
No. I got that backwards. Or a grounder that you throw home. And then a slow roller that you throw first.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like either way, like, yeah, shooting one and then play at the plate with a slow roller. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's so many different avenues that you can go with those infield routines. It's awesome. You know, like,
yeah.
And it definitely depends on the age group. Like you said, like roll two and cover up. Like sometimes like their attention span can only grasp so much. And I'm not belittling kids. You know, it's just like, there's just that limit, you know, the limit of expectation of like, what can you get them to do and still understand, but also be safe? You know, like you don't want to catch her throwing in the third baseman not paying attention. He's smoked, you know, like understanding what that difference is.
My 10-year-old guys definitely, they got it. And I started teaching my 8-year-old guys it. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. Because, like, we just struggle with regular catch. So I don't know how, like, around the horn is going to go. They really did pretty well with it. They enjoyed being timed on it, too. Like, my goal is to get the whole routine done in 7 minutes.
Gotcha.
Right now, with my older boys, we're at, like, 12 to 15.
Yeah.
Usually. But my goal is to get so good at it that we can get the whole routine done.
Yeah, absolutely. Minutes. And like one thing that you could definitely tie in, like right when you get done with play catch, I totally forgot to even mention is like, it's just like going through the around the horns, you know, it's a great, great object. One thing that we like doing is four corners where it's like, you know, groups at third base, second base, first base, like actually on the base and at home. Doesn't matter if you're a second baseman, like we're just going to split it evenly and we're going to go around the horn, you know, clockwise, and we'll go counterclockwise. So everyone's working to, if it's counterclockwise, like then you have to read the ball. Do you turn glove side or do you work inside the inside move? And like you could have fun with it, or you could do a challenge where you split into two different groups. If you have, you know, 8 people, you could do first one to drop it, you know, has to do push-ups.
Yeah.
Or as a group where it's like, you know, you're 2 deep or 3 deep at each bag. Mm-hmm. So just continual going through it.
I'll even do 4 corners for indoor practices.
Oh, absolutely.
So
you could do underhand. You could do underhand feeds. You could do throws. Yep. You could do all that stuff. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Or even short hops. You could do short hops, you know, double play feeds. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many variations. And I think that's where the fun of practice planning comes into play is like, you have a general concept of what you're trying to grasp, but I feel like there's so many different avenues that you could make it fun, you could make it fresh, and not just make it stale.
Right.
You know, there's definitely a point that there's things that you have to accomplish, like play catch. You know, you're not going to scale things up. It's like, no, it's just play catch.
Yeah.
But there's drills like 4 corners that you could just add in different caveats.
So I would say the big chunks
are not caveats of any
practice. The big chunks are some kind of dynamic warm up and stretch. Catch play routine, base running, some skill work, and then some team defensive work. And if you want to work in some hitting, you can do that as well. And you can work that with, if you want to do a scrimmage, you know, don't just throw a kid out there and give them all the pitches to work with. Start with a count. And get those situations going. Put a timer on it.
Yeah.
Make them hustle. You know, all of those kinds of things. And then, you know, like I was saying earlier, that we always end practice with some kind of workout. Push-ups, sit-ups, 5-10 fives. We did some medicine ball stuff. We did squats, squat jumps.
Yeah.
You know, and what I would do is I would set up like six stations, and two kids per station, and you do a 1 minute rotation and you try and get through all six stations twice. And that takes about 15 minutes. You know, that's how I would end practice. It really helped our boys get, you know, faster, stronger, quicker, all those things.
Yeah. I think at the beginning of the season, you definitely have your, you know, your itinerary of like what you need to accomplish before your first game. Once you get mid season, now you're starting to react to, hey, what did we do well and that we can really sharpen, or what did we struggle with? You know, like you said, hey, we got picked off a ton. Well, we're probably going to focus on base running a ton, you know? So it's just a matter of like reacting to the stuff in games, understanding what you did well. We actually started tasking, cause it's hard as a head coach or a one man show where it's like, you can't keep track of everything. So what I like doing is like tasking coaches of like, hey, you watch the outfielders, you make sure they're faded the proper way for the hitter or whatever it is. They're playing well for the situation, but you also need to do some takeaways like, hey, could we have gone better on this or that or whatever it is. I run pitchers and catchers, so it's like, did we execute two strike pitches? No, we're gonna focus on, you know, those out pitches or, you know, whatever it is,
right?
For that following week. So, taking those actual things that you did not so well and implementing it into the practice plan the next week.
I would say the main thing is have a plan.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Write it down. Write it down ahead of time. Take 15, 20 minutes ahead of time.
Yep.
Write out a little agenda, send it to your assistant coaches. Just doing that will be, I think, help you take your coaching from a just showing up and doing the same thing over and over again to a different level.
But I would even go one step further, is like put a time allotment on it too.
Yeah.
So you don't spend an hour and a half on one topic when you're like, oh my gosh, our first term is coming up and we didn't go over signs or we didn't go over base running or we didn't go over this. And it's like a big topic, like put time allotments to those things.
Say we're going to spend 10 minutes on double plays or whatever it is. Yeah. And then just move on to the next thing.
Obviously sometimes you may go for longer on one, you know, subject, but just have an understanding like, hey, we have to get these items in.
It's not hard. But just a little bit of extra effort on the coach's part can go a long way to having good, effective practices instead of old Johnny standing out in right field just waiting for a ball to get hit to him for an hour and a half.
And then he zones out and you have to call his name out and he's not even paying attention.
And then he's got to run laps.
He's like, what, coach? What the heck? Yeah.
All right. Well, this was good. This was good. Well, what do you want to talk about next time?
Our next time we're going to be talking about game strategies. So biggest focus there is like how, like as a head coach, you're the commander in chief, you know, like you're the lead for that game strategy. We're talking about like, how do you handle the team? When do you make coaching changes or pitching changes? Coaching changes. Hopefully you're not changing your coaches, but your pitching changes, how to rotate properly. Also like how to be fair to players, playing time, you know, having those difficult conversations. So we can talk through game strategy from there.
That'd be great. Yeah, I would definitely like to learn something from you about that.
Same with you, man.
Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, take it easy, guys. Have a good Valentine's Day. Thanks, and we'll see you on the next one.
Sounds good.